This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Later today, the Senate is expected to pass legislation to define the legal rights of detainees held at Guantanamo Prison. They would be denied full access to U.S. courts, but would be able to appeal verdicts from military tribunals that include stiff penalties. And any detainee will be able to ask civilian courts for a hearing. And Day to Day is continuing a series of reports featuring a pair of New York lawyers who've been inside the detainee center at Guantanamo Bay. Mary Ann McCune of member station WNYC gave the lawyers a tape recorder, and the lawyers took it with them to Yemen to meet the families of 11 clients held at Guantanamo.
This is Sarah and Doug in Sana'a. We're sipping rum and cokes, disguised, and playing Coke bottles by the pool at our hotel.
It's their first time in Yemen, and attorneys Sarah Havens and Doug Cox are about to become, as Cox puts it, odd intermediaries between the Guantanamo detainees and the families they haven't seen or talked to in more than 3 years.
We met our interpreter, Nabil, today. He took us around the old city.
One thing that we've both mentioned is how different it seems to imagine our clients not in the famous Guantanamo orange, but instead wearing a long galabeya and a traditional decorative dagger and a suit coat. It's a very strange thing to realize that they had these long and complex lives.
Over the next week, these two New York associates have the delicate job of explaining to a dozen Yemeni families why their sons and brothers have been locked up for more than 3 years, but not charged or tried before a judge. And they must do this without revealing any of the government's classified evidence. The families will tell their sides of the story, adding texture and details to a still partial picture of where the detainees came from.
We also had a trip to find an ATM today, and there was a rather interesting sign on the door which had a picture of an AK-47 with a line through it, indicating that while it perhaps might be appropriate to take your AK-47 elsewhere, you couldn't bring it into the bank.
Yemen has among the highest number of guns per capita in the world. It's one of the poorest countries in the Middle East, and local tensions between Islamic fundamentalists and more secular leaders have helped make it a receptive recruiting ground for al-Qaeda. But as Cox and Havens begin carrying their tape recorder into the homes of their clients, the anger they most often record is over the U.S. government's treatment of detainees.
Why Bush administration now is against humanity, against constitution, against liberties. And before, it was the opposite.
This is a meeting with the Altaiz family.
Cox, Havens, and their translator explain to the Altaiz and each of the families they meet that their sons are not likely to go before a judge anytime soon. The detainees' cases are mired in court battles. Ali Altaiz's mother tells Havens she hasn't stopped weeping since her son's capture.
Her tears are like heavy rain.
Her tears like heavy rain.
Well, she should stop because Ali, that's all he worries about.
In each of Cox and Haven's cases, the American government's accounts of what happened clash with the accounts of detainees and their family members.
This is Sarah. I'm in with the woman of the Suidi family. Abdulaziz's mother would like to say something.
Abdulaziz kan tayyib da'if.
Abdulaziz is a very nice, peaceful person, and he left us to go to Pakistan to study languages, and then they took him, even though he has no relationship with any terrorists.
Many of Cox and Haven's clients were captured in Pakistan, and the families tell them their sons and brothers went there to study or find work, but military records tell a different story. In the case of Abdulaziz al-Suidi, they say he attended an advanced al-Qaeda weapons training camp in Afghanistan. His attorneys say Pakistani interrogators tortured him into saying so.
When he was first caught, there were situations in which he was chained to a wall and beaten.
Both Pakistani and American officials have denied such torture was used in interrogations, except in isolated cases of abuse. And they've also denied allegations that Pakistanis turned detainees over to American authorities for cash rewards.
This is Sarah and Doug. We're in a car with two of the brothers of Ali Yahya Mahdi.
Ali Yahya Mahdi is one detainee who's told the military and his attorneys that when he was about 17 years old, he did indeed briefly attend a weapons training camp in Afghanistan, But in his statement to authorities, he says that does not make him an Al-Qaeda member. When Havens and Cox take their recorder to meet his family, they receive one of their warmest welcomes.
Farris has got his own handy cam that he's recording all of this with, of the great visit of the lawyers.
When we went to their home, they brought out the largest display of food I've seen in a long time.
The best part was when on one of the platters of rice was the head of the lamb, and Ali's father pried open the jaw and scooped out the brain and handed it to Doug as, you know, the guest of honor to eat. And to his credit, Doug said it was delicious.
This is Doug. We're in the home of the family of Ali Yamadi, and one of his brothers has given us a poem written by a Sudanese poet about a prisoner, which has been very meaningful to him. And he and his brothers recorded themselves singing this poem.
Ali Yahya Mahdi has told his attorneys and his captors he attended a weapons training camp because his father told him he had to. Then, only a few weeks after he started, he says Americans began bombing Afghanistan.
He fled to Pakistan, and it was there that he was captured.
Haven says while they were visiting Mahdi's family, his father confirmed he ordered his son to attend the camp because they were having financial difficulties. She says other Yemenis told her recruiters pay families to send their sons to such camps. Experts say that's plausible. Yemen does have a long history of sending its youth to Afghanistan to fight the Soviets or the Northern Alliance, and only some have been recruited by Al-Qaeda there. But Mahdi's military review says the classified evidence shows he traveled to Afghanistan to fight with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
After we finished eating, I was invited to go back and sit with the women. Everyone was, you know, dressed without any veils at all. And of course his mother wanted to know how he was, if he was fat or skinny. And he told us a list of food that he wishes that he could eat from his mother. So I told her all of his favorite dishes that she makes that he would love to eat when he gets back. And so she told me she would send me instructions so maybe I could make them myself next time in Guantanamo.
Attorneys Cox and Havens do not claim the welcome they receive from the families of their clients is evidence the men are innocent. But they've reviewed the U.S. government's evidence, and they say in some cases it's no more convincing than the stories their clients tell. And so the attorneys take every opportunity to tell the detainees' stories to the public, in hopes, they say, it will get them a fair hearing with an impartial judge. The Pentagon says the U.S. has given these men more than enough due process. At a press conference in June, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said 200 detainees had already been released.
Regrettably, we now know that some of those detainees that were released from Guantanamo have again taken up arms against the United States and our allies and were again attempting to kill innocent men, women, and children.
Rumsfeld has called the struggle against terrorism unconventional and complex. He says it requires a new set of rules and standards, not the traditional trials the attorneys are advocating. The U.S. has gained vital intelligence from the detainees at Guantanamo, he says, and it will continue holding those it deems dangerous for as long as necessary to keep terrorists from striking again. For NPR News, I'm Marianne McCune.
Tomorrow, the attorneys meet the families of two more detainees, one of whom they think is currently in the hospital at Guantanamo Bay on a hunger strike.